Off top, Detroit officially joined the Eastern Time Zone in 1915. A useful fact that I didn't know. Play the music!
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
All right, welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. So, yeah, I thought that I was 1 hour behind. Didn't realize that we're actually on the same time zone. I'm not ashamed that I'm here, and I'm actually not in Detroit. I'm in my cousin's house in Berkeley, Michigan, and I'm seeing gophers in the backyard. It is weird out here in Michigan. Anyway, Charlie Kravitz, happy to have you join me via internet. Talk about some basketball and some draft stuff. Like, we got a couple games, playoff games that were amazing in series that we got to recap, and some interesting draft conceits that I think we'll throw at the end. Charlie, did you know Detroit was in Eastern time zone?
I didn't until we looked it up together on the phone together, because you thought we were taping in 10 minutes an hour ago.
Hey, let's stay. I'll see you in 10 minutes. You're like, hour, 10 minutes. Like, huh?
Well, like, you are very punctual. Normally, yeah. 5 minutes early is on time, but I was like, an hour and 10 minutes early. is that the new on time?
That is way too early.
I didn't know if you were Pabloing me. I didn't know, like, oh, yeah, be ready in 10 minutes. And, like, just having me sitting there for an hour because you were worried about me Pabloing it up.
I hate that. And it doesn't matter. Pablo will still be late, but I respect you and you respect me. So I have no concerns. You'll be on time. I mean, respect. Here you go with this damn Larry David sound that you make all the time. I hate your Larry David noises.
Do you? Do you really hate it?
I think I don't think you do.
I don't think you do.
So terrible. Such a terrible Larry David impersonation. Anyway, talk about some basketball. I got some other funny stories. I've only been in Detroit for less than 24 hours, but we'll save those for another time later, maybe, or off camera. I'll share them with you off camera, then you can let me know if they are appropriate for on camera.
Have I told you my Larry David story on the podcast? What?
You have a Larry David story?
Yeah.
You met him? Yeah. All right, let's hear it.
I met him. This will be quick. I'll give the SparkNotes version before we talk about the Lakers. So it was like 10 years ago. I was in Martha's Vineyard for my grandmother's 70th birthday. Wow. And it was a Sunday, and I can't remember which season of Curb was premiering on this Sunday in August. And my parents were like, we have to go out to dinner with your grandma. And I was like, I'm going to fall so far behind on the group chat. I need to know what's happening in Curb. There's a series premiere Curb. I can't miss it. They're like, look, don't be an go to dinner with your grandma. So we go to dinner. We pull into the parking lot of the restaurant. We walk in. We're waiting for our table. See this guy at the bar. Corduroy jacket, jeans, Air Monarchs. Larry D. Eating alone at the bar. Gosh. Eating alone at the bar. So obviously I have to say something. He finishes.
No, you don't. I was hoping that it wasn't going there.
No, so he's walking out as we're waiting for our table. We're in sort of the waiting area of the restaurant. He's leaving the bar and it's like, Larry, love the show. Looks at his watch, rolls up his corduroy jacket. It's about an hour before the show's starting. Looks at his watch, looks at me and goes, Do you love the show? I don't think you do. And I obviously turned to my parents. I was like, see, I told you I had to watch the show. I didn't want to be here. And he's like, I don't think you do love the show. You'd be watching it if you did. I was like, it's my grandmother's 70th birthday. And he's like, oh, now you're blaming Granny. Granny's why you aren't watching the show. Okay. And just walks out.
That's a quality Larry David performance. That's a good Larry. I was expecting a much worse story. That's a good story. You didn't.
No.
It was worse postponing LeBron's another Hall of Fame level performance that is unfulfilled. Mm-hmm. Good postponing that conversation, postponing the is Jokic God. Like, there is a competition happening in sports media right now to see who can say the nicest thing about Jokic. And it feels a lot like a lot of people trying to compensate for being wrong at the beginning. I mean, everybody was wrong. Like, considering where he was drafted, no one expected this from Jokic. But are you in the boat of pendulum swinging too far in the other direction now? Is Jokic versus Jordan?
I don't think it's Jokic versus Jordan.
All right. It's getting close there. No one said it yet, but somebody about to say it.
but I don't think the pendulum swinging has got too. If they, I mean, I guess if it's that, if it's like, is he the greatest player of all time? Is he better than Michael Jordan? That's too far. But all the other adoration and praise that's been heaped upon him, like calling him, you know, the best player of his generation, probably right after LeBron for the best player since Jordan with how dominant he's been. Like it's so hard because, okay, we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon before the game tonight. So we're going to talk about Nuggets Lakers. We're going to talk Knicks Sixers. Cavs Magic also happened. But we,
that's a true right now, falling in the woods situation with the Cavs Magic.
Yeah. But like, this is after two first round playoff games. He hasn't repeated yet. He hasn't won the second title and to go along with the third presumptive MVP award. So in the sense of like, are we jumping the gun? Like what happens if they lose before the finals and we have to take back all the great things we've said about Jokic? Of course, that could be slightly premature, but off of the performance that we've seen, the way he elevates his teammates, the way he makes basketball feel like avant-garde poetry with this roster, it's hard to put any amount of too much praise on him.
All right, so I agree with you there. I'm not going to disagree with you there. But you also laid out the point that I'm also making is there's a lot more to be done before we put them. And I guess there's two different conversations. There's like we had this in football often where there's like, who is the best player is different than who is the greatest. And like, I don't think anyone would argue that Tom Brady is better than Patrick Mahomes. But obviously, Tom Brady is greater, given his accomplishments. I mean, anyway, you get the point I'm making. Whether you believe that's a reasonable argument or not, you get the distinction that I'm making. It feels like
we're putting... blaspheme Tom Brady, I mean, author of the 28-3 comeback.
Here we go. All right.
2-0 against Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs.
Find some other comparison that works out. You get the point that I'm making is that there are two different conversations to be had. It's one, Jokic right now is playing as good as we've ever seen anyone play. That's different than being the greatest. And I feel like... maybe it's not an overreaction, but there is some aggressive projection happening that normally doesn't happen. We normally go the other way where it's like, all right. And I think it's because of the route that we've taken. We normally, for NBA stars, we know they're going to be good. Then they show up and they're good. And then we start comparing them. And then we're like, you have to reach this milestone. You have to reach this milestone. You have to reach this milestone before we respect you. We're doing it differently, which I think is honestly part of the pendulum swing where it's like, damn. He's better than we expected. He's the greatest. And he is going to do all this stuff. There is no... What?
That's not why that's happening for the Jokic.
No, I'm not saying... I'm saying the conversation. You are not listening. You're trying to gaslight me. I'm not going to allow it to happen. I'm saying the conversation, not the ability. The ability is different than the conversation. I think the ability is as high as anyone we've seen. I agree with that. I'm just saying that normally we set these... benchmarks that they have to, milestones they have to reach before we put them in this conversation. No one with one championship has been in these conversations. That's all.
I mean, if we're going to go that way, you had Bobby Knight calling. First of all, we're going to explain to the audience, we're going to backtrack and explain this incredible basketball game that we watched last night between the Lakers and the Nuggets, where they came back for 20 points a game. It doesn't happen.
I think they've seen it broken down a bunch of times. I don't think they need us to break down what happened at the end of that game. We're coming out on Wednesday from a Monday game.
Well, it's significant because in the last two postseasons, the Nuggets have come back 10 times from double digit deficits. They're 6-4 in games four of those are against the Lakers, and they just never seem out of games because of how well they can execute because of the two-man game with Jokic and Murray. But to your point about expectation, like, look, Bobby Knight called Michael Jordan the best player of all time before he'd been drafted. Larry Bird called Jesus Michael Jordan.
That was Larry Bird.
Jesus. Yeah.
Okay.
Bobby Knight was the quote where he told the Blazers to play Michael Jordan at center. They needed a center.
That's a great quote.
Yeah. But so like there are times like when you're talking about the greatest players in the history of sport, guys who are sort of transformational figures, where you get to it really early and you get to it before the accomplishments meet the talent. That's
I guess I'm accustomed to the LeBron journey, which has been entirely different, where he was the chosen one since he was 16. And from the time, even before he got to the NBA, we'd always been comparing him to Ghost. And that was the path that we went. Right. There was like every step of the way was like, have you done this before, Jordan? How does this look compared to Kobe? Have you done this up until this point? And I do think that part of the reason why the path has been different for Jokic is because, and maybe you don't want to say it's a pendulum swing or it's a reaction to the projection, but I do think the path has been different in part because he kept surprising people. It was like, he's not a number one overall pick. Oh, maybe he's not an all-star. Oh, maybe he's not an MVP. Oh, maybe he's not a champion. Oh, maybe he's the best of all time. Maybe we should just stop arguing. Like, I do think that the path is part of the conversation.
That's fair. I also just like,
you just don't want to talk about it anymore. You obviously don't agree with me.
I was just wondering, then do you think it helps him that we got gaslit out of giving him his third consecutive MVP last year? So I mean, it's surprising.
I actually do. I think that those in basketball more than any other sport, and I guess maybe quarterbacks too, I think that it colors the way that we talk about Embiid. Like, it's almost cuts against you if you have regular season success. It raises the expectations. The same thing with Jason Tatum, where there was a point where we're like, man, Jason Tatum's so great. He's headed in his direction.
He's only 19.
Yeah. He's been 19 for 7 years now. But that was the point. It was like, man, he's so young. He's going to be this. He's going to be that. And now we're at a point with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, honestly, where it's like, win a championship already. They can't do anything else to raise their raise our perception of them until they win a championship.
Mm-hmm. So that game, the reason I wanted to get into that game, because even though it's 2 days later, to me, that felt like a finals game. And it was really interesting because I thought the last 6 minutes of LeBron in that game was like A+ LeBron James. Like, I know people, you got the Skip Bayless's of the world giving him a hard time for missing the step back three where he pushed off at the end. And like, that's silly because it was three-pointer, dive to the rim, huge deflection, dunk on the fast break, orchestrating the offense. When that offense had become really stagnant in the few minutes when LeBron was off the floor in the second half and they sort of gave up the 20-point lead. And on the other side, we saw something that was like, you know, the year that LeBron and Davis won the title, they averaged like 56 points per game together. And it was like, this team is so athletic. This is so big. This is an all-time duo, what they're doing. And then at the end of the game, we saw crazy production from Murray, who had been cold the entire time. Jokic had 7 points down the stretch. He finished 27, 20, and 10. And I do want to ask you, because I think we both agree that this series is now probably going in the Nuggets direction. I think that's fair to say. I don't want to take the steam out of it moving forward. Who knows what will happen when it goes back to the crypt. But when you were watching that game, when you're digesting it, did it feel more about the Nuggets or the Lakers rather than the conversation about Jokic's greatness, which there is more to.
Yeah, we can have the Jokic conversation again. I mean, we're going to have many chances to have that through the course of this playoffs, I feel. But I felt like it was more about the Lakers, honestly. Like, to me, the story of this game is very similar to the story of the game before. Is like, they just don't have it in the support. The Lakers don't. And they were up by 20. They got up by even more in this game than they did in the game before. And the Nuggets came back and got them. And I know I said after game one that at no point did I think like it was over for the Nuggets. In this game, I was like, all right, the Lakers got this one. So much so that I was like, you know what? I can go to sleep and catch the fourth quarter in the morning. And I went to sleep. And then we saw what happened afterwards. And that to me, it feels like they've been disappointed. And obviously, I know D'Angelo had a great bounce back offensively. But you, the basketball nerd that you are going to point out that his defensive lapses were an issue, I'm sure. But I felt like I was just, where's Austin Reeves? That's the one that jumps out to me. And he has not been getting the criticism, which I don't know. I'm not here arguing that we should be harder on players. But that's the missing piece to me is Austin Reeves' offensive production. And to the point that you're making, LeBron James was coordinating the offense all the time. Anthony Davis can't do it. Who's the guy that D'Angelo Russell? He's a shooter, essentially. He can't do it. You need someone else to be able to generate offense for this team. Darvin Ham, cook something up, baby. Like, you need somebody to be able to generate something for this team offensively other than LeBron James shooting step back threes and barreling through people into the paint. And I thought that it was supposed to be Austin Reaves based on what we saw last year, based on the contract. Like, where the hell is Austin Reaves?
Yeah, I mean, like, I it's impossible to disagree with you. He's shooting the ball like in this series, and like, he put up 21 points against the Nuggets last year on like elite efficiency. And it's beyond that, beyond the shooting, it's the offensive creation. Because like, you brought up the Russell point. When they had Reaves off the floor and it was Russell and AD and they surrendered the lead, and there was a point in the third quarter where even though Russell had made the six threes in the first quarter, he gave up back cuts to Jamal Murray, KCP, Reggie Jackson, and Christian Brown all in one quarter. And it seemed like they couldn't get stops. And because he's not someone who can get a foot in the paint, he's not someone who creates open threes. And that's what they need Austin Reaves to do. And his shooting helps that a lot. So, I mean, to me, it's on both those guards and Rui not really being there. But I did wonder, so you went to bed before Anthony Davis. You went to bed at the same time as Anthony Davis.
Yeah, I took, he actually got one more shot than me in the fourth quarter. Surprisingly.
So what do you think about him? He had his off day between games one and game two being like, it's sort of laughable that I wasn't a defensive player of the year finalist. I've never won that award. I'm the best defender in the league. Like, that's someone who expect, and he had 32 points in this game. He had a monster first half. It seemed like this was going to be an Anthony Davis. I'm going to try and score 50. But what did you think about that performance where he sort of wilted down the stretch and Jokic just took it through his chest?
Yeah. It's a bad look when the game winning shot is hit on you and you are 0-for-1 in the fourth quarter. Like, there's no, I have to be honest, in watching the game, I don't remember thinking like, where the hell is Anthony Davis? They need to get him involved in offense because like, LeBron was scoring. I think looking back at it and looking how like exhausted and defeated that team looked at the end, it's like, yeah, AD, that's why you are here. And these are the moments where you need to, and LeBron was doing it. That's the thing, where you need to make big defensive plays and you also got to make big offensive plays. Yeah. And comparing that big two to the big two on the other side is where you're like, all right, because Jamal Murray has not been good throughout the course of this series. But in the fourth quarter, need to make some plays. He made some really big plays. Yeah. And the same thing for Jokic. And that's what, like, it's, I want to make like, it about the surrounding people, but they were in the game at the end, and the fourth quarters normally are not about the like the supporting cast. They're about the stars.
And here's the thing. Anthony Davis said he could switch 1 through 5. Jamal Murray was licking his chops. He was like delighted to get that switch onto Anthony Davis and create a little bit of space because LeBron had been hawking him and been such a problem down the stretch. I mean, to me, you think it was more about the Lakers. I think it's about, I really do think it's about the Nuggets. And maybe this is my personal pendulum swinging too hard, but it's rare to have a duo like this. Obviously, it's Jokic plus co-star Jamal Murray. It's not Jokic and Murray. That's very clear, but the way they play together is unbelievable. And Murray occupies this space because I think he came into this league and we thought this is going to be another one of these shoot first guards who's were sort of ham-fistedly jamming into a point guard position when he's a shooting guard. And he's become a great playmaker. He works perfectly with Jokic because he is the point guard a lot of times. He can play off the ball. He can move really well. He can create shots for others. He's unselfish. He's also, it is so rare to have a number two that you just trust to make big shots down the stretch of high leverage playoff games. That's the criticism that we levy to a lot of number twos in the league, is that they aren't trustworthy in those situations. Murray's the exact opposite. Yeah. He's so strong on defense.
Trusting him in those moments, like I'm trying to think of, Kyrie's the only one that comes to mind where it's like there's a number two that we're like, oh, he is capable of taking the big shots in these moments also. No one else really comes to mind in those. I mean, I guess the Warriors never really felt like
Game 6 Clay.
Yeah, Game 6 Clay, but I'm saying the Warriors never really felt like there was, it always felt closer to egalitarian, even though Steph was clearly the best player. But you know that the ball is going into the number one guy's hands in the fourth quarter in big moments. You don't when it's the Nuggets, because Jamal Murray, if we learned nothing from the bubble, I think was the first time we were kind of introduced to like, Jamal Murray can take it to this other level that we did not anticipate. we do know that in those clutch situations, he seems incredibly comfortable, even if Austin Reaves is giving him hell all game long.
At least he's at least trying. And like, yeah, I mean, Murray, he's a 6'4 guard who's incredibly powerful. And it's like, it's still shocking to see, like, we were led to believe that Steph Curry was a below average defender for years when he was good, because switch on to LeBron James, mouse in the house, I'm going to punish you and get to the rim. And Murray's so powerful as a point of attack defender that that doesn't happen. Like, it's a really special team that was homegrown and has played together for so long that the continuity and chemistry is awesome. Like, we didn't have, other than Michael Porter Jr. and Jokic, a single nugget hit a three, but you still ended up having effective games from KCP, Murray, who couldn't buy a jump shot. Aaron Gordon at moments was like extremely valuable. Like, there's something that's really unique about this team. But I do want to ask you this. And by the way, that the Nuggets only scoring 12 bench points was really bailed out by the fact that the Lakers only scored 6, and they're all from Torian Prince on 2 3-pointers. But I do want to ask you this. Is there any fear? Because now that we are anointing the Nuggets, like the favorites, I think they're the media favorites, even above the Celtics, who had been this dominant regular season team. Do you have any fear? Because I think I do, of them playing this short rotation and wearing themselves out in a series against the Lakers. Because that really felt like a finals game. Game 2 felt like a finals game. It was not a single playoff game. Even though the Nuggets won, they're going to be somewhat, it's going to go on their odometer that they're going to fight through this series and then play a Clippers or a Mavs team that's going to be a war, and then go through another tough team in the Western Conference Finals. They're going to get to the Celtics in the finals and just be, oh, we have to play this team that's 10 deep and be somewhat out of gas.
Yeah, I was having a real hard time taking your question seriously until you got to the finals. Because yeah. Up and through the entire Western Conference, like, we're not looking at some deep teams that are also young and virile in the same way. Like, I don't think there's anybody in the West that I would be concerned about them being too tired to knock off. But I get your point. When they get to the Celtics, I guess the plan is right now they're going to get a lot of rest after this series, because I don't know. That game was really, it felt particularly demoralizing. There's something to be said for having game one in your hand and losing it, and then having it happen again in even more dramatic fashion in game two and losing it. I don't see the Lakers pushing this past 5, maybe not past 4. And that will bode well for the Nuggets rest throughout the rest of the playoffs. But they'll have a tough series eventually, if it's the Timberwolves or, I don't know, maybe the, like you mentioned, the Mavs, or somebody will give them a tough series. Yeah. OKC will give them a tough series. And then they'll go into the finals. So yeah, I guess there is something to be worried about there, but that's never been the thing. Like, that feels like attrition feels like a football concern more than a basketball concern, but you're right. It could be.
I mean, it's very interesting, because that's what was creeping into my mind during the sort of Jokic coronation, because that's looming there. Like, the Celtics are a really good team. Like, we like to make fun of them on this show and on lots of shows. But they're really good, and the numbers suggest that they're going to be really tough, and they are a uniquely built defensive team with length and power that can, give the Celtics fits. Hold on. My dogs just walked in.
Cool. I like the dogs. They're always welcome. I'm watching a gopher and squirrel I've been watching for the whole show. I don't know if you see me look off camera above every now and then. It's because there's like these squirrels, and I think it's a gopher. They're just running around out here looking at each other, waiting for them to fight. What's your money on? Gopher versus 2 squirrels. Who you got? Oh, maybe it's not a gopher. It's like... Some sort of, maybe. I feel like muskrats are nocturnal, aren't they? I don't know. It's some sort of like short-legged, pudgy mammal running around my cousin's backyard, and these 2 squirrels got their eye on them. Who you picking? Squirrels, pick it up? Squirrels or gophers? Oh, I thought we were still going. This is all good.
Oh, actually. Sorry. Okay. Well, speaking of vermin, can I tell you my favorite part of the... Can I tell you my favorite part of this Lakers experience?
Go ahead.
I love the press conference walk-offs with LeBron and Anthony Davis, because LeBron and Anthony Davis are Pinky in the Brain. What's the plan? What's the plan tonight, LeBron? It's to beat the Nuggets. The same plan as every night, which goes poorly. And then to see LeBron be like, oh, I'm going to do a press conference storm off and blame the refs. And then to see Anthony Davis, like his version of Pinky, do the same thing 5 minutes later and storm out. It's the best. This is the best storm
this
out
is,
since LeBron's pretty much broken hand when he told the media to be better. And he had the little boy biker shorts on.
Okay, so I find myself as the like player apologist, and I like defend players and feel sorry for them in certain situations, but this is too funny. Does this have any like life on the internet? Them as Pinky in the Brain? Like it's perfect.
This is out of my brain.
And I remember watching Pinky in the Brain, where the brain would be like thinking and pacing back and forth, and Pinky would be doing the exact same thing. Like I feel like you need to supercut this together. And you need to take the internet by storm.
I mean, there's a legitimate chance that if they lose game three, LeBron will punch the wall and have a pretty much broken hand, and then Anthony Davis will follow and also punch the wall and have a pretty much broken hand.
The best part, though, is the what are we going to do tonight, LeBron? Same thing we do every night, AD. Try to beat Nikola Jokic. And then inevitably fail miserably, just like Pinky the Brain. I used to love that cartoon. Animaniacs? You're too young for Animaniacs.
No.
Or maybe I was too old to be watching Animaniacs, but I loved it after school. It was great.
Well, so like that was like I was like, it was like kindergarten age for me. I think I think they like recycled a lot of cartoons too, where they lived for like a decade back in that. I digress.
Remember
to move on to the other game?
Yeah, I was about to set you up for a transition.
Oh, sorry.
I was about to
go ahead.
I was planning to bring up the Good Feathers because they were from the cartoon, and that would give you entree. Speaking of pudgy New York birds, I don't know.
I mean, I guess I'm the pigeon here. Sorry. These are the things when we're not in person recording this online, where we step on each other on transitions.
I hate it. I miss you so much.
I miss you. I miss you.
We got to get you. Anytime I travel, you got to come with me. I'm going to NABJ. You're coming.
Ooh, can't wait.
I don't give a I'm bringing you to NABJ this year. We're going to do a live show, NABJ. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do. Big, small, and when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DF today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DF.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You know who else would really enjoy a live show in ABJ? Two people I got in mind. Isaiah Hartenstein, right, and Dante DiVincenzo would love it there.
Isaiah Hartenstein, he is our fusion dance. He's us.
It kind of does look like if we were like had our genes smashed together. Oh gosh,
that stretched out.
Yeah, it stretched out. Coming out big. So, he made a lot of big buckets. He was giving my man Embiid the blues.
Well, that's what I was wondering about that, because like you saw Embiid out there, he couldn't run. They lost this a heartbreaker to the Knicks. 76ers fans are very upset about the refs. It wasn't even a great Brunson game. It was Hart. It was Dante. It was Hartenstein. Do you feel bad for Joel Embiid?
Yeah. I mean, that was a dumb question, you know. So, like, I feel bad for players who – I'm sorry, not a dumb question, but the answer is obvious. I feel bad for players who have much less heartache than Joel Embiid. Like, it's tough watching Joel Embiid out there. Like, he's pushing – he's doing boxing out without even trying to get the rebound. Like, it's because he doesn't want to jump or land. It's really uncomfortable watching him. And they're still, like, in these games, and this was another felt like demoralizing loss. I mean, this is very demoralizing when they're...
I'd say so.
Yeah, it's a terrible way to lose a game. And then the way that they handled the loss of the game, and Nick Nurse with his complaining about timeouts and fouls and stuff like that never comes off well. I understand the heat of the moment. You might say some things, but like, we blew it. We blew it. Like, Lowry's got to make the free throws. We got to take our time on the inbound pass. We got to actually call a timeout. I think that's what annoyed me. And it's fine. Like, I think we all may, like, stretch the truth. Or actually, maybe not stretch the truth. Genuinely believe that things are different than they actually happen. You weren't trying to call a timeout, Nick. You weren't trying to call a timeout. Yeah, he pumped it.
We got the slow-mo. He pulled it back.
He had a pre-tee, and then the ball was bouncing around, and then you tried to call a timeout. Like, so I don't know. It's just a sad way to go out for a team that seemed like they deserve to win that game. But either way, it's just so sad watching. This is not a team that's looking to reach a new plateau to build on. This is a team that has championship aspirations, and watching Joel Embiid, unless there's some miracle drug that we don't know about, he's not talk about are the Nuggets going to be too tired. Let's say, hypothetically, they get through this series. What do y'all think is going to happen? You think Joel Embiid is going to get better? He's going to get healthier as the playoffs go along? No. Like, this team, this year, this season, started out promising, and Maxey's taking a step, which is encouraging. However, this team ain't winning nothing this year, which is sad, because Joel is getting up there in age for someone his size.
Yeah, I do feel bad for Embiid. It was tough watching him limp around out there.
Look at you.
And growing. He couldn't close his left eye because of some weird thing that was going on.
That's why his head was down, like, though, all right? Yeah, like, I felt like we got a lot of people, body language doctors, negatively evaluating his post-game body language. But I assume that his head was down was because he didn't want his eyes, and well, I don't know. Either way, it's weird, I mean, I don't get it, and it's concerning.
It's definitely, I felt bad for him because he's actually, I think he's gone through so much going into these postseasons that he just wants to be out there. And it's like, it's also, I'm sure he knows the clock on this. Like, he's had so much, so many issues with his lower body, along with, I mean, the thumb, the orbital bone, the knees, the feet, that like, this is a 30-year-old guy who, when he came out, if you look at the old things of Embiid from Kansas, like, Drewski's compared to, like, Hakeem was because he had this crazy footwork. He was doing up and unders. He was so lean. He moved so well. Of course, he was also African and played soccer, so there was some of that too. But there was like this totally different type of player. And now he's put on all this weight. He's this guy who's amazingly skilled from the nail, taking jump shots and then bullying you in the paint. But we're going to start seeing these injuries rack up to the point where I don't know how many opportunities we're going to get left with dominant Joel Embiid before he sort of looks like mid-90s Arvydas Sabonis after the Achilles injuries, where it's like he's a useful player, but he's not this guy. Like, time is running out for that. They didn't get any useful stuff out of this Harden trade for this series. It's him and Maxey. It seems like this window is not what it should be for someone who's this great of a player. And I'm sure it's incredibly frustrating.
It has to be. And I don't know where you found this empathy that you normally don't find for any other players, but I'm happy you did. I guess I shouldn't complain about the times that you don't have it and appreciate that you have it there, because that does suck. Like, he doesn't want any of this to happen, obviously. And he's been close before. I guess that Raptors run is the closest they've been with that crazy shot, right, from Kawhi. But it feels like he's never been healthy, and there's no reason to believe that that the future is going to hold this one magical postseason run. But it's possible that his career, to your point, the Sabonis comparison is an interesting one, because I don't remember the great Sabonis. I've heard about the great Sabonis,
yeah,
but I don't remember, and it's Arvydas, not DeMontis, obviously. I've heard about it, but I don't remember it. But I do remember him being like an integral part to some competitive teams. I think, and maybe this, we're jumping the gun, it's premature, but I think that could be a fun outcome for Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
Is eventually being not the number one option, but being I don't know if he's as good enough, he's certainly not as good a passer as Sabonis, but I feel like that type of player has to be a really good passer. And I guess Embiid can develop that. It's not like he's not an incredible athlete and doesn't understand the game.
So in career high in assists this year, he's getting better as a passer. Some parallels too with like Bill Walton, 1986.
Yeah, that's the guy.
Former MVP, a lot of injuries. Obviously, people compare Walton to Jokic because of the athleticism, or because of the passing. Not the athleticism. The athleticism was much more like Embiid, because he was a but that's someone who had, of course, he won a title, but he had this period where people were like, he's better than Kareem, Jokic being the Kareem in this. And then he wasn't. Injuries robbed him of the rest of his prime. And he had one extra run being the sixth man on the Celtics and helping one of the best teams of all time. That seems like that could be something in the future for Embiid. Thoughts on the Knicks? Can I cliche you down?
Give it to me.
Are the Knicks a team you don't want to play in round two?
No, they're not. They're a team you definitely want to play in round two.
They're dogs and they're winners. These are the Villanova National Championship Knicks.
Oh gosh. Yeah. I mean, they could be annoying, I'm sure. I think what it comes down to is you're talking about the Celtics, right? It's like the Celtics are the only team that I think has like high enough expectations in the East where they're the team that could be disappointed. And if I'm the Celtics and I'm looking at the remaining teams, the Knicks are near the top of the list of teams that I would like to play. Well, actually, the Cavs and the Magic, yeah, whatever. I think
the Pacers.
I don't want to. Yeah, the Pacers. I don't want to mess with.
It's just the Bucks.
It's just Giannis. No, not the Bucks. It's not the Bucks. Yeah. It's Giannis. I don't want to deal with Giannis. I know he's not healthy yet, but there are some players that are good enough and they go into modes where nothing else matters. Those players are all Giannis and on the Celtics. None of the rest of the teams in the East have a player like that. So I'm good with your scrappy underdog, tough guy team. Tibbs gonna play tough D. No thanks. I'm the Celtics. I'm not concerned with that. Concerned with the Heat if Jimmy Butler was healthy, and I'm concerned with Giannis.
Well, that doesn't ask. Does this Knicks team remind you any bit of that Heat team from last year? Like, what if they, like, if you have Dante turn into Caleb Martin for this stretch and Brunson gets hot? Don't let Jalen Brunson get hot. I also want to ask you, do you want your coach to sort of look like Pat Riley have the slick back hair and be cool? Or do you want him to look like Tom Thibodeau? Because you were texting me during the game about how sad Thibodeau's hair is. I'm like, yeah, that's a man that's been diagnosing pick and roll defenses for the last 6 months in this room, just yelling, yelling.
I want my coach to be fly. Give me a fly coach. I want Pat Riley. Who is the modern day Pat Riley? Who is the coach that is actually fly in basketball? Oh my gosh. We've done plenty of basketball stuff.
It's like the NFL draft. Okay. So here's something we were talking about that I think is pretty interesting. It's something we've talked about on the show a lot, which is fits for prospects and how the fit in the team is so essential for a talented player's success. And so I was wondering, are there any prospects and fits that you think would work out particularly well? Keeping this in the first round, guys that we've all thought about.
Yeah, I think first of all, I find this to be a more interesting way to talk about the draft, in part because I don't have much faith, and I have less faith now in my ability to project draft player success. I've less faith now than I did 7 years ago, or however long I've been doing this. And it's just like, I've been wrong so many times. And I think to defend myself is like, I don't think I was wrong because of the ability as much as I thought. I think I was wrong because of the opportunities that the players were given. And so like, I'm going to be all confident when I talk about this. I'm doing a live show real soon. I'll be confident about the decisions that I make. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, I understand that there's more randomness involved. So I think it might be better, honestly, if we start making draft projections after the draft. It's like the players in the right situations. I'll be like, all right, now I know this guy can't miss. And I think that there's only one player in this draft that, like, I feel like I would bet money on can't miss. And Marvin Harrison Jr., you wouldn't be surprised if you've been listening to me talk about this draft. He's the only one that I think is so talented that the situation doesn't matter. However, I think that there's a situation, or there's a possibility, that Michael Penix ends up with the Rams and turns out to be one of the best quarterbacks in football for however long his knees and shoulders can hold up. I think that's a situation, a talented quarterback who has the arm strength, the understanding of offense, and I understand there are like accuracy questions around Michael Penix, but I think in the LaFleur system, in the McVay system, I like him taking over and with a year to sit behind Stafford, who is also a big arm quarterback. I think Michael Penix is falling behind a lot of these other quarterbacks solely based on projection of his injuries, not based on his ability. Cause he's better than JJ McCarthy. I think he was better than Drake May in certain situations. I guess Jaden Daniels, he won the Heisman, so it's hard to say he's better than him.
Yeah.
But I think that his ability in the right situation with the right coach and with talented receivers, I think Michael Penix to the Rams could be shockingly good.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I think it's really interesting to like look at the draft that way, about what happens after the pick being more important than before in certain ways. Yeah. Obviously, I mean, there are levels to it. Like I've heard draft experts talk about the tools that Caleb Williams has and how if you combine other prospects, they don't have the tools that he has. But I think obviously there are bars to this, but it's interesting. There's one that I want to present to you from the quarterback stuff, which is something that Orlovsky pointed out, which is Drake May to the Giants, which is Brian Daboll has a track record of big, strong, athletic quarterbacks who might be too aggressive, who might have a need to have like pull back a little bit, use a different club in the bag, maybe put a little loft on it and lay up with the 7-iron rather than hit driver on every hole. And Drake May fits that perfectly. Like he did it with Josh Allen. The best year of Daniel Jones's career was the first year of Daboll. And the seam might be getting a little bit hot there, but if he can develop a really talented quarterback who might be like that guy was number two or 1B behind Caleb Williams all year. It didn't seem like he did anything to lose the spot. And then since January, Jaden Daniels has seemingly supplanted him on that big board, and he could drop behind JJ McCarthy even. And if that guy's there for the Giants at six with the way that Dable likes to coach, that's something that I think could be a really exciting fit.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting selling point. I think I'm less high on Dayball quarterback whisperer than most people, because I don't think the track record is as long as you want it to sound. Daniel Jones had his best year with him. That's fair. The Josh Allen thing is amazing. That's a one-time thing. Before Josh Allen and after Josh Allen. But I think that's a great argument, a great sales pitch. If I'm a Giants fan, I'm hyped. Like, oh, you got this guy? You're going to turn him into Josh Allen? He has similar skills to Josh Allen, and he doesn't have, like, all the same abilities as Josh Allen. But I get it. Like, I like that as a sales pitch. Let me see. Who else is interesting? Who I really want is Ladd McConkey with the Chiefs, just because I think it'd be hilarious watching my man Ladd get busy and watching everyone fall in love with him and say that he's a better receiver than Malik Neighbors because he's putting up big numbers with Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. I like that as a setup. What do you think?
He looks so much like Michael Porter Jr. They have the same face.
Trust me, they are not the same. After I saw Lance 40 time, I did a little research and discovered that there is very little similarity in ethnicity between the two families. But yeah.
Do you like Ladd McConkey because he can work on the outside and the inside? And he's toolsy, a lot bigger. You see someone named Ladd McConkey and you assume he's 5'8", 150 pounds, but he's not.
I like that from Ladd McConkey. And he's obviously, I think, there are only some receivers that are going to be around at the time when the Chiefs get a pick. And I think Ladd McConkey would be good in that situation. I'm half joking because I think it'd just be funny watching us all lose our minds when Ladd McConkey is putting up Justin Jefferson numbers as the number two receiver to Hollywood, I guess. It just would be a fun season of football when the Chiefs offense goes from mediocre to awesome on the strength of Ladd McConkey's sneaky fast speed. That's all I really want.
So I have another receiver for the next one.
Yeah.
Rome Odunze to the Bears. I know the Bears might trade out of the pick at nine. I think the top three receivers in this draft are like pretty unimpeachable. Everyone thinks that they're total studs in Harrison, Neighbors, and Odunze. And they're going to have Caleb Williams. They've got Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. Just do the Bengals build. Have incredible pass catchers. Set it up for a future where you have a number one receiver growing at the same time as Caleb Williams. I think it'd be so fun. I know you could pitch me on trading back, pitch me on drafting a tackle, keep Caleb upright.
I mean, maybe it's too early for a pass rusher considering the relative depth, but I like Latu for this team because they still, I mean, the Eberflus defense is based around having a strong defensive line, and they've started taking steps to improve it, but, you know, you're going to need numbers there. So I have less exciting interest there for them. But, yeah, I think Odunze would be fun, and that's hell of an exciting place to start for a quarterback with all those weapons at receiver. But and I guess they could get another tackle later in the draft that might pan out. So I don't hate that.
So producer Brian, hold on, just to cut you off. Producer Brian G-chatted me a question saying that Mahomes raised Travis Kelce's fame to the level that he got to start dating Taylor Swift.
Yes.
What are we going with Ladd McConkey? Is he is he going to be dating Ice Spice by week 8?
Well played. Yeah, I was trying to think of someone, but yeah. Well, it won't be Ice Spice, as we discussed. There's limited connection there. It'll be, I don't know, who's the young Taylor Swift? I don't know. I'm not in these crowds.
I don't know. Someone on TikTok?
We're old. Yeah, someone on TikTok.
Olivia
Rodrigo. There's a couple other makes sense to me. I don't know what she looks like, but works for him. All right, there's a couple other ones that I just want to run through that I think are worth discussing. Like, Jaden Daniels to the Vikings is floating around. I think that'd be really exciting fit and could work out really well for obvious reasons that anyone who's been following this podcast or the draft knows the Vikings situation is good, and he's a super talented quarterback. Where Bowers ends up, the tight end out of Georgia, would be interesting. Mm-hmm. I think some people have him mocked to the Jets, which I actually think Jets need to get a tackle, man. Like, that O-line is not completely solved with older guys that can't play a full season. Get a tackle, which could leave Bowers there for, I know you like, to the Bengals to kind of put another great pass catcher with, hopefully, healthy Joe Burrow.
Cancel Christmas this year if it's Chase Higgins and Bowers all together for 1 year. Even if it's fleeting, healthy Joe Burrow with those guys, like, that's... You want an exciting rivalry with someone in the Chiefs in the AFC? Like, that's it. That's a terrifying team to play.
All right. I want you to hit them with the two Xaviers before we close it out, because I think those are fun that are worth talking about.
Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina. He's a sort of controversial prospect, 6'3", 227, ran great at the combine. Didn't really produce till his fifth year in college football. Get him on the 49ers. Like, if this is really potentially Debo's last year, like, those tools are rare. Him in that system would be awesome. And then the last one won't happen, but I love it. I need it to happen. For the love of God, Dolphins, draft Xavier Worthy. I know you have a million other holes. You need a new offensive line. But you were a defensive back. If you're facing a team that has Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Xavier Worthy, Raheem Mostert, Devon Achane on the field, and you're looking at that team, how terrified are you? How much fecal matter is sitting in the bottom of your pants when you see that team?
I just had to re-Google Xavier Worthy's 40 time because I had the ridiculous number of 421 in my mind. So I had to Google it to make sure that I was obviously wrong. I was not wrong. That man ran a 4.2-1. And I know that it doesn't always translate, but I don't give a shit. That speed, man, it's scary as hell. All those guys, like, you might have one corner that can run with Tyreek Hill, if you're lucky, which means you don't have one that can run with Waddle, which means that you definitely don't have one that can run with Xavier Worthy. We out here running 4.2s against 4.5 guys. Football is only that simple. Too bad they can't protect long enough. Anyway, you just ended on a sad, stressful note before I hit the mean streets of Detroit with my cousin for some good times.
A gallivant without me. I'm very sad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We went vanting last night. We actually went to, what's his name? Dan Gilbert's restaurant just opened here. We went there last night, and the Cavs game was on for a little bit, but then turned it off because it was boring.
Switched over to the Knicks at Dan Gilbert's sports bar. Was the menu written in Comic Sans?
No, it was not. It was a new restaurant. He's from Cleveland, right? I think.
No, he's from Detroit.
I mean, that's what he's from. Yeah, he's from Detroit. Yeah, he's from,
our friend Pablo Torre did the article about rival Michigan mortgage brokers, Matt Ishbia and Dan Gilbert. Great episode. Check it out.
Yeah, whatever. Check it out after you check this one out again and rate and review it and all that stuff. Anyway, Charlie, it's been fun. I miss you. I'll be back home soon. And we can do this in person. Thanks for everything to you and all of our wonderful producers, Kevin, Brian, Serafina, Megan, and Cortez. And we out.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.